Paul Stanley sits before a mirror in Adelaide, Australia, in 2013, carefully painting the iconic star over his right eye, a ritual performed thousands of times. But this moment is different. For the first time in decades, he's applying makeup not as armor against the world, but as celebration of a hard-won truth. The scared kid from Queens finally made peace with himself. Born with microtia, a congenital deformity leaving him without a right ear and deaf on that side, Stanley Eisen spent his childhood as Stanley the One-Eared Monster, tormented by neighborhood kids. Yet this same boy would become the star child, fronting one of rock's most theatrical bands. His memoir reveals something more profound than typical rock and roll excess. It's about transforming shame into power, isolation into connection, and discovering that the masks we wear can ultimately help us find who we really are. Stanley's Queens childhood was emotionally barren. His parents cycled through explosive Friday fights and weekend silences. Being the good kid compared to his troubled sister Julia made him invisible. Vivid nightmares haunted him, floating on a dock in infinite darkness, steering a car without a wheel, his psyche screaming about lack of control and isolation. The danger was real. Julia, deteriorating after electroshock therapy, once chased him with a hammer, smashing through his bedroom door. When his parents returned, they punished him, not her. School proved equally challenging. Despite his intelligence, partial deafness created an invisible barrier. Teachers' words drifted past unreachable. His parents repeated, "God gave you this wonderful brain and you're not using it." They never grasped the real problem. Then came February 1964, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Watching them transform an audience, Stanley saw his escape. Music could remake you completely. At 15, riding through Queens, Stanley had an epiphany. He needed professional help or he wouldn't survive. He found an outpatient psychiatric clinic at Mount Sinai Hospital, called them himself, and showed up saying, "I need help." His father dismissed it. "You just want to be different." But Stanley kept going, taking the subway and bus every Wednesday to see Dr. Jesse Hilson. Music consumed him. He wrote Firehouse after hearing The Move's Fire Brigade, attended concerts alone, Hendrix, The Who, Traffic, and worked various jobs to fund his obsession. He slept with older women in encounters requiring no emotional vulnerability. When he saw Led Zeppelin in 1969, Jimmy Page's guitar work hit him like Beethoven had at age 5, raw, transformative power. After barely graduating near the bottom of his class, he attempted college for 1 week before dropping out. Music demanded no backup plan. Stanley's partnership with Gene Klein, later Simmons, began awkwardly. Gene arrived in overalls like someone from Hee-Haw, positioning himself as musically superior. Yet Stanley recognized something crucial. Gene was focused, talented, and equally ambitious. Together, they could slay the dragon neither could face alone. After Wicked Lester failed, they crafted a new vision, complete unity of sound and image. They wrote 100,000 Years, Deuce, and Strutter, their styles complementing perfectly. Stanley Eisen became Paul Stanley, a star's name, not an ethnic one. With Peter Criss and Ace Frehley, they became Kiss. The makeup emerged during late-night experiments with mirrors in their loft. Stanley created his star-eyed look because he was too tired after perfecting one eye to do both. The makeup wasn't costume, but externalized identity, visual representations of their inner selves. For Stanley, Kiss provided something he'd never experienced, belonging, an us-against-the-world mentality that was profoundly empowering. Their breakthrough came with Alive in 1975, capturing their live energy as studio albums hadn't. Almost overnight, they went from opening act to headliners. New Year's Eve 1975 at Nassau Coliseum marked their triumph. Blue Oyster Cult now opening for them, a complete reversal from 2 years earlier. Backstage, they received gold albums. Elvis had gold albums. The Beatles had gold albums. Now Stanley did too. Success brought everything he'd imagined. dating models, luxury cars, a duplex on 80th and Madison displaying his guitar collection. He became intoxicated with buying whatever he wanted. Tiffany lamps, shoes in every color, expensive watches, draping the scared little boy inside with another image. Yet despite outward success, Stanley remained profoundly insecure, living triple lives: the star child, the perceived Stanley without makeup, and the real Stanley who still felt unworthy. Money brought freedom from worry, but it doesn't change who you are fundamentally. Meanwhile, the band fractured. Peter and Ace increasingly turned to drugs and alcohol. Ace, once bright with potential, became incapacitated by booze, Valium, cocaine. Stanley's anger grew. He'd bested his ass while they played fast and loose with their future. His marriage to Pam Bowen showed similar dysfunction. After rotator cuff surgery, she drove him home, then abandoned him to manage painkillers alone. When he finally gave her a choice, "You can choose to be happy, or you can choose to be gone," she chose to leave. By 1983, Kiss's dwindling audience had tired of their cartoon image. Removing the makeup was survival, not boldness. MTV embraced the unmasked band, and album sales skyrocketed. Audiences had rejected their look, not their music. Though they'd traded uniqueness for generic hairband aesthetics, Lick It Up and Animalize each sold 2 million copies. In 1988, watching London's Phantom of the Opera, Stanley felt profound connection when Christine unmasked the Phantom. Despite no theater background, he knew he could play that role. In 1999, he did, in Toronto's production. Opening night terrified him. His deafness made hearing the orchestra difficult. But the unmasking scene resonated deeply, mirroring his lifelong fear of exposure. The revelation struck him. Christine rejects the Phantom not for his face, but for his distorted soul. During this period, Stanley underwent reconstructive ear surgery and met Aaron, a practicing attorney. Their honest, drama-free connection felt divinely orchestrated. They married in 2005 and welcomed 3 children. At 62 with young children, Stanley experiences blessings he never imagined. His life with Aaron offers a second chance at the nurturing childhood he missed. Their household centers around cherished rituals: family dinners, tending their garden, making sauce from homegrown tomatoes, creating pizzas in their backyard wood-burning oven. He recalls seeing Mike in the Mechanics in the 1980s checking into a hotel surrounded by children, thinking it was the antithesis of rock and roll cool. Now, his greatest pleasures come from having his children aboard the Kiss jet or watching them side stage in pajamas during soundcheck. On stage, he maintains unwavering commitment to delivering the complete Kiss experience, understanding that for each audience member, that specific night is their only night. Stanley's perspective on mortality has evolved. Individuals are temporary, but what they create can be eternal. His journey from profound unhappiness to peace proves transformation is possible at any stage. His message rings clear: we can do better, we deserve better, and it's never too late to become our authentic selves. The boy who hid his deformed ear beneath long hair now creates an atmosphere where his children feel secure and cherished. The greatest achievement isn't fame or fortune, it's finding peace within yourself and creating a legacy of love.